Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Welcome to the intersection of common and economic sense, where our guests make green sense. Bob Kessler, executive producer, is here to tell us more about today's guests.
Robert, out in California, you know, they had months, even years of dryness. Now rain, that's not necessarily such a good thing to go between those two extremes, but if people learn to manage the land a little bit better, it could also present some good business opportunities. We'll check in with the Pacific Institute. Also, we have more batteries now than ever, and how can we improve at recycling? We'll check in with Call to Recycle.
All coming up on today's show. At any given moment, we're surrounded by batteries, both one-time use and rechargeable. How to best recycle is a challenge we need to overcome in the U.S. and worldwide. But there has been some significant progress. The group, Call to Recycle, says more than 7 million pounds of batteries were diverted from landfills and recycled last year. To help us understand more about recycling batteries, we're joined by CEO and President Carl Smith. Carl, welcome to Green Sense.
Thank you.
Let's start out basic here. Recycling all waste and diverting them from the landfill makes green sense. What's harmful about letting batteries go to landfills, and what are the dangers and hazards involved with batteries?
There are two reasons to recycle batteries. Certain battery chemistries, particularly older ones like small sealed lead acid batteries and nickel cadmium batteries, contain harmful metals that you don't want to put in landfills in case they leachate into the water supply. The second reason is almost all batteries contain very useful metals that can be repurposed after recycling to create secondary products, thereby preventing you from having to mine for virgin resources to build new batteries.
With batteries having toxic components, why hasn't the government regulated the recycling of these?
Well, for lead batteries and nickel-cadmium batteries, they have regulated it. There was a 1996 act passed by the federal government that that talked and spoke to issues regarding the recycling, and several states have followed up from legislation. But those battery chemistries really are not widely made anymore, at least for consumer batteries. Most consumer rechargeable and alkaline batteries now contain no harmful metals or materials.
Carl, explain the battery recycling process. How do they take these apart?
Well, there's two fundamental ways that batteries are recycled. One is referred to as hydrometallurgic, which is placing the batteries into acidic solutions that ultimately break down the constituent parts into materials that can be used in secondary products. The other method is what's called pyrometallurgical processes, where heat is used to separate the batteries. It's similar to what you hear about as smelters that is used for a lot of metalworking across a number of industries. Both processes really try to optimize what materials, unique materials you can get out of those batteries that can be properly separated into the constituent parts that are able to be used in other products.
Well, as I said earlier, 7 million pounds of batteries were diverted from landfills. That sounds significant. How does that stack up against other years?
Well, actually, our total battery collections in 2018 was slightly down from 2017. We collected approximately 8 million pounds of batteries in the U.S. in 2018. in 2017. The main difference is increasingly rechargeable batteries are embedded in products and are not intended to be removed by consumers, which makes it very difficult for a consumer to separate those batteries and put them into the proper waste stream. So what happens is at the end of life of the host product, that electronics product typically is disposed of collectively, which means the battery may or may not be properly recycled.
But isn't that good and bad in the long run? We'll have less batteries going to the landfill?
No, because the assumption is that the electronics products won't go into the landfill. They may very well go into the landfill and may not be properly disposed of, because similar to batteries, there is not a nationwide mandate that the electronics are recycled. So in order to ensure that you optimize what you're getting out of the battery, the only way to do it is to properly separate the battery from the electronics product.
What would you say the public's doing right when it comes to recycling batteries?
I think generally speaking, and we've taken a considerable number of surveys of this, most of the general public believes that batteries should be recycled. That's very different than you get for a lot of materials in the marketplace where there's uncertainty whether a material ought to be recycled. So the awareness that a battery should be recycled is pretty high. Conversely, the general public doesn't always know how to recycle the batteries. That is, what they can do with them. And in fact, some inadvertently put them in a curbside recycling bin, which should never take place because commingled with other materials often is a safety hazard. And it requires, unfortunately, a little bit of work to figure out where best to take your batteries to ensure they're handled properly at end of life.
What would you say the number one thing that consumers can do to improve recycling?
The number one thing that they can do is make themselves aware of whether it is for any material, plastics. They've got to educate themselves on what can be recycled and where they can take and how they need to handle something in order for it to be recycled. Unfortunately, what we have the mentality of is sort of a bit of recycling laziness. And what I mean by that is that if they think something is recyclable, whether their municipality does or does not recycle them, they end up just sort of flopping them with everything else in the bin. And that usually contaminates the whole amount of material that's in there to be recycled, making it very, very difficult to maximize what we do end up recycling.
My guest is Carl Smith, CEO of Call to Recycle, and we're talking about battery recycling. Well, we talked about what the consumer can do to improve. What about the battery industry? Has it done enough to educate people about the nuances of recycling and properly disposing batteries?
We can always do more. Industry should education generally on waste and waste management is not as widespread as it needs to be, and it's not just industry. It's generally speaking, seeing more leadership as this as being a major issue. As a society, we have delegated the responsibility for waste and waste management often to municipal governments rather than having a clear nationwide or even regional approach to it. And as a consequence, information on recycling is often very inconsistent, fragmented, and as a consequence, it hasn't had a very meaningful impact on the behavior of consumers.
What about the idea of making battery companies take the batteries back at the end of life cycle?
Well, there are some states that do that, and there's some countries in the EU particularly that require it. Certainly that you would have the tendency of being more concerned about recycling if, in fact, there were such legislation in place, but thus far states have not all been that interested in pursuing that legislation.
Your program first came into being in 1994. Since that time, we have more people, more technology, and more devices that run on battery. Have we been able to keep up when it comes to recycling?
No, we haven't. Even though our collections have grown over the years, and we've now collected, you know, close to 150 million pounds of batteries in the U.S., it's still just a very small percentage of everything that's being put on the market. And technology is being introduced far more rapidly than our commitment has risen to make sure things are retired at the end of life.
Well, we touched on this earlier. Would it be better if all batteries were rechargeable and not the kind that you have to throw out after they run out of juice?
Not necessarily. There are certain applications where it makes all the sense in the world that you have single-use batteries. The example that we talk about all the time are things like smoke detectors. What happens with a rechargeable battery is that the power slowly and generally runs out, and when it doesn't work anymore, there's still as much as an 80% charge in a rechargeable battery. A single-use battery is much better in an application like a smoke detector, where it tells you more clearly when that battery can no longer hold a charge and it needs to be replaced. So while there is a lot more use of rechargeable batteries that would make sense, it would be unfair to declare everything is more appropriate for rechargeable batteries.
And that's a good answer. Well, we love Vanity Days here in our country, and there's actually a National Battery Day. What's the purpose of the day, and how do we make every day National Battery Day?
Well, the purpose of National Battery Day is for us to maximize the awareness of the need and the ability to recycle batteries. And it is with the power and the freedom to be able to have mobile devices powered by batteries comes a responsibility, and that responsibility is to ensure that those batteries are handled carefully, and when they can no longer hold a charge, they're recycled appropriately. And we'd like that to occur every day of the year, but National Battery Day gives us an opportunity to highlight it.
Carl, thanks for joining us on GreenSense.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
That's Carl Smith of Call to Recycle. You can learn more at call2recycle.org. I'm Robert Colangelo, reminding you to subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow. Thank you.
As climate change intensifies, things like extreme drought, followed by heavy rainfall, will become more commonplace. That's what's being experienced right now in parts of California. Many suburban and urban communities are unable to manage these intense swings between wet and dry. But the Pacific Institute, a global water think tank, has been looking at how specific areas, like the Santa Ana River watershed, can better manage the land to address climate change. We're joined by the Pacific Institute's Director of Research, Heather Cooley. Heather, welcome to GreenSense.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What kind of challenges are experienced when you get extreme drought followed by heavy rains?
Well, there are a number of challenges associated with those extremes. Of course, with drought, the most obvious is the lack of water availability. And so you have to develop mechanisms, I think, to reduce water waste and maximize efficiency. There's less water available for people. There's certainly less water available for ecosystems as well. So really managing that water resources is critical during droughts. But I would argue it's just critical all the time. And then when we see the year that we're having this year, a very, very wet year, we see flooding. We see water quality issues associated with flooding, but also from runoff from our urban areas. And so, these swings and these really what I think are sort of rapid swings from very, very wet to very, very dry are going to be a challenge for us to manage going forward, particularly given that our urban areas are just not well equipped to deal with these conditions.
The recent study you've conducted focuses on the Santa Ana watershed. Can you describe the watershed, size, geographic area covers, and why you picked this area?
Yeah, the Santa Ana River watershed is in Southern California. It's really just sort of in between Los Angeles. I think most people are familiar with that, and San Diego. It's an area that it's a rapidly growing area. It's a very diverse. It goes from the coast to inland areas. So there are some hotter parts of the region, some cooler parts. But I think one of the resounding issues around the area is water scarcity is a concern, but there are also water quality concerns. There's also flooding in some areas. So it's an area I think that is sort of indicative of the many challenges we face in California, but across the nation. And I think some of the challenges are similar, but is some of the opportunities as well. And so, yes, while we looked at the Santa Ana River watershed, we see that some of the solutions we identified and the opportunities there can be seen around the country.
This area is highly developed. Talk a little bit about how development impacts the natural landscape and how it can exacerbate the impact from extreme drought and rains.
So it is a developed in a rapidly sort of growing area. And that, of course, puts pressure on water resources. Whether or not there's adequate water to meet the needs of the population. But in addition, as there's been growth, there's been pavement. And so, that is an area that has groundwater, but we've paved over some of the recharge areas and are continuing to do that. So associated with paving over and reducing recharge is really increasing scarcity. There are also, though, issues around water quality. Many of the river water bodies there are what are called 303D listed. Those are classified as impaired waters. Of course, there are areas that are within the 100 and 500 year flood zone, but areas that also experience localized flooding, again, from the fact that we've paved over some of the recharge areas. So that when there are rain events, and again, these intensifying rain events, we see big flushes of water that are really can be difficult to manage.
My guest is Heather Cooley, Pacific Institute's Director of Research, and we're talking about their recent study and solutions for better watershed land management. Your study proposes sustainable landscape practices. Let's talk about that and give us some concrete examples of what that consists of.
Yeah, so there, you know, given the threats we're seeing, I think the good news is there are a lot of things we can be doing to better manage, I would argue, sort of land use, which then can provide opportunities for improving water management. So we looked at opportunities on sustainable landscape practices. So that would include taking out thirsty lawns, a very water-intensive land use, and replacing it with climate-appropriate plants. Also looking at boosting soil health so that we are using water efficiently, capturing rainwater. But in addition to some of the things, you know, associated with changing out lawn and putting in more appropriate plants, we also looked at some of the opportunities for dealing with the pavement, things like putting in bioswales, which can collect some of the rainwater and then infiltrate it underground. Looked at green roofs, looked at opportunities for rainwater cisterns as well to capture rainwater and then make that available for later use.
Are your recommendations existing practices that we know how to do and it's just a matter of implementing them, or are they new and innovative techniques, or a combination of both?
Well, I think all of these things are being done in some places, particularly in new developments. The challenge is that we have in many places a lot of older developments that, you know, still, you know, were put in many cases without thinking about the water resource challenges that we now face. So much of what we're talking about is really retrofitting some of these old landscapes, some of these old parking lots, and putting in some of these strategies that we know work. I think it's important to note that, you know, we're thinking about this from some of the water benefits that these sort of sustainable landscapes can provide, but they can also provide other benefits. They can reduce energy use and greenhouse gas emissions. By building soil health, we can sequester carbon. And so this gets at trying to mitigate climate change, not just adapt to it. They can also improve community livability. And from, you know, we looked at this from the commercial and industrial parcels. It can improve employee productivity. You know, these are really beautiful functional landscapes. Many people feel happier, frankly, when they're there. And so again, that I think has a benefit not only to the company, but also to the community and the watershed more broadly.
Well, a good segue into that line of thinking is that we often hear the argument that environmental efforts are in opposition of business interests. And your study also looked at business opportunities that can be created from good management practices. So please describe some of those opportunities.
Yeah, I think there are a number of opportunities, and I don't buy the sort of it's one or the other. I think there are things we can do that are both a benefit for the environment and a benefit for business. On the one hand, it's the fact that what we're talking about are retrofits. And so there will have to be changes, and associated with those changes, you know, taking out lawns, putting in these climate appropriate plants, putting in some of these bioswales, that means jobs, frankly. It means people to construct and install these measures, but also maintaining them. So there are some business benefits there. But there's also some indication that when you make these changes, it improves, as I mentioned, worker productivity. That is a benefit to the company. It can reduce some of their costs, right? Some of their operation and maintenance costs. It can reduce some of their energy costs, depending on the strategy they choose. There's also some evidence, and this is particularly for more retail applications, that it increases foot traffic. And of course, when there's more foot traffic, for example, in a mall or in some other retail area, that does lead to a boost for the businesses that are nearby. So there are many, I think, economic benefits that we can realize from changing out these landscapes and these paved areas.
We first met the Pacific Institute when we interviewed your founder and now president emeritus, Peter Glick. And we interviewed Peter about the need to reduce plastic water bottles. Where do you stand on that issue? Have you moved on, or are you still trying to reduce the amount of water bottles used?
Yeah, our organization looks to promote sustainable water management in a variety of locations and in a variety of ways. And certainly plastic use and plastics in general are a major polluter in waterways. And so, yes, I mean, in my mind, improving water management and municipal water management is a way that we can reduce uses of plastic. So we haven't moved on from that issue, but it's not the only issue we work on. We really work on a broad ways of improving water use and management.
Heather, thanks for joining us on Green Sense.
Great. Well, thank you very much for having me. It was great speaking with you.
That's the Pacific Institute's Director of Research, Heather Cooley. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is Green Sense. Subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com. We hope you enjoyed this edition of Green Sense. Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and you can check out the list of radio stations that air our show. All you have to do is stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
GreenSense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. The program is copyright GreenSense Farms, all rights reserved.